wanted to let you know that I had a house guest whose granddaughter stayed with me, and she tested positive for COVID today. And so that's why I put myself in an N95 mask in the back of the room as far from you as I could be and still run the meeting. So that explains this craziness over here. So it's 4:34. I'm going to call the meeting to order and ask you to join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And we have quorum today, but for the purpose of the recording, I'm going to ask everybody to go around the room and introduce themselves. And I'll start. Today is Monday, October 10th, and this is a meeting of the Ethics Commission, and this is Ellen Schmidt.
Eric Freiberger, commission member.
J.J. Dixon, commission member.
Linda McCallum, commission member.
Mary Glenn Love, commission member.
Tanya Lisa, commission member.
Kirby Eberdorfer, ethics director.
Good afternoon, Cherry Pollin, office of general counsel.
Sandy Hummerkouse, ethics office.
Mary Myers, ethics office.
Thanks, everybody. Kirby, do you want to start the meeting with an ethics thought for us?
Sorry for the brief delay. Yes, I have an ethics thought. Since you are going to be considering the election of your leaders today for next year, I thought I would bring you an ethics quote on leadership. So Michael Josephson says, "Great leaders are teachers, not tyrants. They help their followers see and understand more. They inspire them to become more and motivate them to do more." And Linda Fisher Thornton says, "Leading with positive ethical values builds trust and brings out the best in people, which brings out the best in the organization, which leads to great results."
Thank you. So moving on to the minutes approval, last month we had a workshop meeting because we did not have quorum, and so we did not review the minutes at the last meeting. Has everybody had a chance to look at the minutes? I read them over today. So let's do them one at a time. Perhaps someone would want to make a motion regarding the Ethics Commission meeting minutes from May 4th.
I will make a motion to approve those.
Second.
Excellent. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anybody opposed? Excellent. Now, moving on to the Internal Operations Committee meeting from July 25th.
Yes, ma'am. Mary Love, chair of that Internal Operations Committee meeting. I move approval of the minutes.
Thank you.
Second.
Excellent. Any discussion? Again, hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anybody opposed? None. Now on to the Nominating Committee meeting, which was July 27th.
And this is Linda McCallum, chair of the Nominating Committee, and I will move to accept those minutes.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Excellent. Any discussion? Again, hearing none. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Excellent. Any opposed? No. And then finally, the Ethics Commission meeting from the 31st of August.
I move to accept, LaTanya Lipscomb-Smith, I move to accept the Ethics Commission meeting minutes from August 31st.
Thank you.
Second, J.J. Dixon.
Any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Anybody opposed? No. Thank you, everybody. Moving on to reports. Kirby, do we have a report from the Ethics Office?
Yes, thank you very much. I actually have an update on the quorum, just to jump back a little bit. Mr. DeVote is not feeling well, so he's unable to attend today, and Ms. Gallner just confirmed that her jury selection is still proceeding, so she will not be in attendance today as well. So both of those will be excused in the minutes.
Thank you.
So the Echo office has been really busy this period of time. Since we last met at the end of August, we have been working on the vacancy of the Ethics 2, Attorney 2 position, and we did finish grading those exams and have had some preliminary discussions with Employee Services. I'm thrilled to announce that our budget went before and was approved by City Council at the end of September. So the budget numbers that you all were provided at the last meeting are still true for us this coming year. And we have been working on lots of advice calls coming in, lots of conflicts, working with some council members employed by nonprofit organizations that are required to file an affidavit under the new ethics code provision that was enacted last year. You might recall Section 602.413. So we were working intently with Ms. Johnston, who is with us from the Office of General Counsel. And actually, I'm remiss that I did not start my report with that and welcoming here today. She's chief of the Legislative Affairs Department in the Office of General Counsel, and she's going to be giving you a training on the legislative process and how a bill becomes a law. But she's been working intently with us on the affidavit required by Section 413 and some other conflict matters. We did have a new council member elected during a special election near the end of August, and we trained her at the beginning of September, and we also trained her ECA in September, so we were thrilled to have the opportunity to do that. We are working on a number of significant trainings to close out the year. We will be doing a training at the request of JTA for all of their managers on the week of October 24th. We're going to be training the Jacksonville Fire and Rescue Department higher level employees as well. We've got a couple of training initiatives that we're working on through the Inspector General recommendations with Employee Services. We've got some training for Public Works. We'll be doing a training for the Government Operations Team and the Office of General Counsel, some City Council training. So we are kind of booked up tight on trainings for the end of the year. And that is my report.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions for Kirby? Cherry, how about you? Do you have a report from the Office of General Counsel?
No report. Thank you.
Okay, excellent. And Kirby, can you say just a word about Complaints Committee?
Yes. Per our internal operating procedures, the Complaints Committee is required to give a report at each Ethics Commission meeting, and the status is still the same as the last meeting. There is one complaint that's pending.
Thank you. Internal operations, we have a report.
We discussed the changes that were proposed in the workshop last meeting, and the minutes reflect those changes in detail. Probably the easiest thing to look at, however, is the document itself that comprises a nice compendium, in effect, that shows the new offered changes and how they fit into what the whole document will look like. So if you look at this one page that I'm kind of showing you all around, that just says internal operating procedures at the very top, it's probably the last attachment in what you received in advance of the meeting, and it's also the last attachment in the package that you just received when you arrived here. If you follow that along, you'll see that it's consistent with the minutes and it's consistent with the summary that I gave you last week. And basically what we're doing here is taking into account the availability of communications by media technology and how that's going to work in this setting where people are asking to attend, in effect, by media technology instead of in person. And as you may remember from the last meeting, we outlined these six ideas that would be obvious reasons for justifying electronic attendance. And then we also gave ourselves discretion in case something came up. We gave everybody a time frame, and then we also have shade meetings discussed here. All of this came from a compendium, a collection that our staff gave us about how other groups are doing this within the broader city. And so I move that we accept these procedures as our operating procedures and put them in effect, and then let's see how they do.
I second that motion.
Thank you. Any discussion or questions for the committee?
I have a question. The section that's struck out at the bottom of the page, I'm just wondering why that was struck out.
We thought it was redundant.
Okay.
Because right. we're covering it basically within the body of what's left over.
Okay.
It can be a part of the problem with electronic attendance is they need to be able to hear us. We need to be able to hear them, and we need to have it in such a fashion that the public, if they're attending, can hear.
Right.
And in fact, that can include telephonic or other electronic methods. But we thought we had it within the body.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you.
Thank you. I had a thought which does not need to be incorporated into this process, but one of the things that I've been doing, since this has come up a few times while I've been chair, is if, particularly if we're in a shade meeting and somebody's participating remotely, I've been asking them to affirm that the person, that they have privacy, so that the person who we might be talking about at the shade committee meeting would know that even though somebody's participating electronically, they're not doing it like in a sports bar with their phone on speaker. And I would maybe suggest that just become a habit of the chair. What are your thoughts about that? Did that seem like a reasonable process to use?
I'm not sure I understood. You're talking about a sports bar and well, privacy? No.
Am I not loud enough?
I think we
talked about that. That's the part where the person who...
Kirby, your mic works
out. No, it's not. It's not. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, this one.
You're talking about the practicalities of how the chair would run a shade meeting if someone was attending electronically.
Just to ensure, the subject of the shade meeting, that the person who was participating remotely was honoring their confidence by doing it in private.
Right. And, I think we did discuss that.
We did.
And I apologize for not queuing in quicker. And I think our discussion about it was that anyone attending a shade meeting under any circumstances is bound by the same confidentiality, and the chair can definitely reassure the person present who's the subject of this shade meeting that is indeed happening. And we could even get to the point, if they have a doubt about it, that the person on the other line can reaffirm their understanding of that. Mm-hmm. I think the reason we didn't go any further with that, if memory serves, is because the very nature of it is understood to be confidential.
I think that's reasonable, and as long as I'm the chair for my next, 8 weeks, I will continue the practice if we have somebody participating remotely, and then the next chair can decide if that's comfortable. But I hear what you're saying about the... it's already understood that you have a level of confidentiality in a shade meeting. So I agree that it doesn't need to be added, but I just thought it was worth bringing up.
Yeah, I think it's worth discussing and having in our record. When we all get our training joining the commission, that's emphasized.
Yes.
And then the nice thing about having an experienced staff as we do, they keep us straight.
Yes, thank goodness.
And then by the time someone is chair, they've had some experience and had probably seen one or two. But so I think that's how we were imagining that.
Okay, excellent. And we had a motion and a second and a little discussion. Is there anybody else who wants to add to the discussion? I don't hear anybody, so I will ask for a vote. All those in favor of accepting the recommendation of our internal operating committee for a standard for remote attendance and participation by ethics commission members at meetings, say aye.
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 Is anybody opposed? Oh, excellent. The motion carries. And next up, we were going to hear from our nominating committee.
Yes, Linda McCallum, chair of that committee. We had a wonderful meeting where we interviewed four candidates, all of whom were so qualified that we had to have serious discussions, and we were able to narrow it down to who we recommended, that the committee recommended that be accepted by this commission. And you have her resume there. It's Miss Jamie Buller. And we found her to be a perfect fit for this commission with her experience and her background. Mm-hmm. So I would move that we, as the chair of that committee, I would move that we accept Jamie Buller as our next member.
In Judge Second. McCallum, before somebody seconds,
okay,
I'm going to insert a dramatic pause. A dramatic pause.
I guess I do.
I had a conversation with Kirby earlier today, and one of the things that made Jamie a fantastic candidate is that she has been serving and is currently serving on the Board of Clinical Social Work, Marriage and Family Therapy, and Mental Health Counseling as an appointee of the governor. And there's a small concern that she may not be eligible to serve on two, like a board and a commission. So the ethics office is going to investigate that and give us some advice. And so we want to recommend that we hold off on the vote until that work takes place, because if we elect her today and if this is correct, then she will automatically come off the other board, and we don't want to accidentally do that to her. Did I sum it up correctly?
So what I'm hearing is that a request for me to withdraw my motion to propose her and table that motion for another time.
Yes.
So I will do that.
Apologize that I'm baby in the corner over here and did not get to see you ahead of time.
No worries. I understand exactly what you're saying. I will withdraw my motion. Hopefully it works, because she's a wonderful candidate, would be an incredible addition to the commission.
Thank you. And I should back up one step and offer my heartfelt thanks to the members of our Internal Operations Committee for the work that you did on that. I meant to say that when we got to the end of the discussion, Judge McCallum, Mary Bland, and LaTanya, thank you for all your work there. And a similar thanks to the Nominating Committee, because that, under your leadership, because that was no easy task either. And Darcy, Judge McCallum, and I were on that committee, and they were very great candidates, and it was difficult to come to. It's when you're abundance of riches. We should all be so lucky. So thank you. And we've done some of our new business already. We're waiving the first thing. And Did I miss something?
No, you didn't, but I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Backing up to the nominating committee, I don't even know how to phrase this. I guess I just want to know if it would be appropriate for, if the office did the research and found out that she was not eligible, is it appropriate to ask the committee to go ahead and bring us another name when we come back of the others if she can't serve? And that way we don't waste another month.
I think we would have no difficulty doing that.
Assuming
they're still interested, would we be allowed to go back to the other three?
I'm making eye contact with Kirby, because this hasn't happened to me before, but I can think of no reason why we couldn't. The other candidates were very strong. It was very difficult. Everybody had merits, and assuming, to your point, if they were still interested, we, I'm sure, could come up with another suggestion. Does that seem reasonable?
Yes, through the chair, absolutely. It'd be whatever the committee would have as their preference to do. I will say that one of your four candidates, Mr. Maul, is being appointed by Public Defender Cofer to fill Ms. Love's spot after her term ends in December. So he has been taken, so to speak. But you would have two other candidates potentially available to you.
Which was, that was part of our thought. So
excellent.
So with permission, if I get the word that she cannot serve, I will reach out to Kirby and set up another maybe meeting of the members to pick the next person to go forward.
Thank you. That would be perfect. So great question and great additional discussion, and I appreciate everybody's work on this. Okay, so looking at new business, one, two, three, there's four items, and we already did one, and we did three, so legislative process training. Looks like Andrea's getting your...
You can either sit down or stand up, whatever you're comfortable with.
Legislative Affairs and Land Use Division of the Office of General Counsel, and I typically provide training for new elected officials and ECAs and council members on this topic, but oftentimes we do modify it to address boards and commissions, and Kirby had asked me to come and talk to you a little bit more about the legislative process to give you somewhat of a big picture scale, and then give you some examples. And Kirby's going to also be jumping in, I believe, in the conversation, so hold tight. I think I forgot some of my papers I was going to reference. But we'll go ahead and get started. So, as we mentioned, this is going to be an overview with a general overview of the legislative process. And I forget to change the slides, so you might have to bear with me there. And then the legislative highlights for the Ethics Commission, and that's going to be the more particular items that you would be interested in, which are the appointment process, legislation that your commission may offer, or legislation that comes to you from other bodies where they're asking you for your thoughts. So we're going to start with how a bill becomes a law. And Andrea... so smartly did the bill on Capitol Hill.
Yes.
Do you remember that? When I saw this, I said, Andrea, that's great. I love that. That's what I think of when I hear when people talk about how a bill becomes a law. I think of the After School Rock program from the 70s and 80s that I watched. So we're just going to do a kind of general process. I have an outline of the time frame that you're dealing with when you deal with legislation. And I'll mention some specifics, and then in some other slides I'll get into some more details. But essentially, the council process for legislation filing and approval is approximately a six-week process. Sometimes it can be a little longer depending on the type of bill and whether there's any requested deferrals or something comes up where the item has to be deferred for a period of time. But essentially... and I will get into more detail about the filing of the bills that Ms. Pollock helps you with, the appointments and things of that nature. So oftentimes I think you are familiar with that from her. But essentially, once the bill is filed, there's a council deadline, which is the Wednesday immediately preceding the Tuesday council meeting where it's going to be introduced. So any bill that is going to... The idea is to file it for the council meeting. It would have to be filed the Wednesday prior. And we have a division called Legislative Services Division. They work with the city council. They're the ones that take that bill from us. We file it with them. That's what's considered filing when you submit it to Legislative Services Division. We have a deadline of 3 o'clock, and you can't really exceed that deadline unless there's an extraordinary circumstance. And if you do exceed that timeline and you still want to be on the council agenda, there's a process for an addendum, and it requires the permission of the council president. So we always try to file things within that deadline so that we don't have to request any additional procedures to get on the council agenda. So what happens at the first council reading? The short answer is not much. It appears on the council agenda. That first council meeting. So It will be towards the end, and depending on whether it's an ordinance or resolution, I'll talk a little more about the differences between the two. There are two different sections, but they're at the end of the agenda. And there's public comment reference there because if you are aware that a bill is going to be introduced and you have interest in possibly giving comment on it, there's always public comment at council meetings. It occurs pretty early on in the process. There's a few items that come up before the public comment. They have quasi-judicial items, which you can't have additional evidence presented. So they do public comment after that period. You can speak on anything on the agenda during public comment, or you can speak on things outside of the agenda. So if you were aware that a bill was being filed and you had interest in that bill, you could certainly fill out a speaker's card and you would have 3 minutes during public comment to speak about that. And that's before the council takes any action at all on it. So then the next step in the process would be the following week, the bill would appear on the committee's agenda and the committees to which it's assigned. There's six committees. So maybe in one committee, it may be in three. Occasionally, if you have a bill of particular interest, it can go to all committees. And in that case, sometimes the council will meet as a whole rather than have committee meetings to for efficiency. But on the committee agendas, it will also be notated. It will be at the end of the committee items, and there will be a second beside it. The second means it's just being seconded and re-referred back to council just as a procedural matter. There's no action taken. Then at the second council meeting, after the bill has been filed, that's an important time for a bill for discussion purposes. For ordinances, you're going to have a scheduled public hearing, which is noticed pursuant to Chapter 166 Florida statutes. And for any resolutions, you have public participation. There isn't really a substantive difference in the two of those being called public hearing versus public participation. There is a little bit of a distinction in the state statutes, but they both provide an opportunity for anyone from the public to speak on that bill, whether it be an ordinance or resolution, for 3 minutes at a time. So if you were interested in a particular bill, it doesn't have to apply to the Ethics Commission, any bill that you're interested in, on second reading, that's a powerful time in the process for the public and any individuals that are interested in the bill to get up and have 3 minutes to speak to all 19 council members in one setting. So that's an important time for if you get questions from the public about access and how they can communicate with council members, that's a great way to do it. Then the following week is when it goes back to the committee, and this is the time that the committee is actually going to review and consider the bill. There are public comment opportunities at the committee meetings. However, each committee handles public comment a little differently. The chairs have the discretion as to when they have the public comment period. For instance, the Rules Committee chair will take up appointments before he takes up public comment, but then the ordinances and other substantive matters follow the public comment period of time. The finance chair takes up public comment at the end of the meetings. And the other committees just kind of vary. So if you have specific questions about committees and public comment, I can probably respond more directly. But they don't follow a set process. And then after the committee takes up the bill, they can do a few things. They can either vote to approve it just as it is. They can vote to not approve it. They can vote to defer it if they need additional time or want to see additional information that maybe someone doesn't have available. Or they can amend the bill as well. And sometimes you'll have comments from the council auditor's office. They will make recommendations for amendments for technical, scriveners, things of that nature, not really as to policy. But they will make amendments to possibly correct things. And so the committee can also decide that there's substantive changes they want in the bill, and they can direct the Office of General Counsel basically to prepare that amendment. And then those amendments that are approved are filed with the Legislative Services Division by the Friday of that week when the committees meet. And the importance of getting that done by Friday is the next Tuesday is the council meeting where they're going to take action, and you want to have enough time for legislative services to upload this information onto the city website so that there is transparency for the public and there's an opportunity for people to look at the amendments before it goes to the council the following Tuesday. And so then you get to the third reading of council. That's where final action typically occurs. And again, you can have items that are deferred or postponed at various times in the cycle, but given a normal cycle, it's about a six-week process. And then after the council votes on a bill, most of the bills go to the mayor for signature, and that usually will take up to another 2 weeks or so. And that is why the total time listed is 6 to 8 weeks. That's kind of a general understanding of the process. So that's very kind of general and kind of probably a lot of information for you in terms of the time frame. But council, the committees meet on the first and third week of the month, and council meets on the second and fourth. So whenever you have like a 30-day calendar for a month available, you can always track the committee and the council schedules based off of the calendar and say, okay, the first and third is always going to be committees, the second and fourth is always going to be council. And so what I've said through this process here where I've outlined this, sometimes it's easy to see on your fingers when you do, if it's introduced, this is the first introduction, then it's going to go to committee, nothing's going to happen. It's going to go to council, that's where the public hearing, where the public participation is, then it goes to the committee for action, then it goes back to the council on third reading, and that's where action is taken. So a little easier to see sometimes visually that way or when you're looking at a calendar. And so whenever there's a month that has what we call a fifth week where you have the committee, council, and there's another several days before the end of the month, that's what we call a fifth week. And there's no legislation filed, there's no committee meetings, there's no council meetings, so that's just what you call a bi-week. You just kind of have to calculate that in if you're calculating calendars for appointments or other action by the council. Lastly, who can file legislation? Any council member can file legislation. The council president also will file legislation on behalf of the mayor or on behalf of particular boards, in your case, for appointments and things of that nature. We will submit that legislation to the council president. He will introduce it on your behalf. And then the mayor also, through the council president, when the mayor's departments have legislation. Next slide is going to be really hard to read and probably, let's see. What I wanted to show you on this slide is you would have to take off, you don't need to look at the first two columns. Those have to do with the mayor's budget review process, which for our purposes we're not talking about today. But essentially we have these schedules outlined that Cherry utilizes, Kirby can utilize, especially when you're looking at appointments and how quickly you can have a member appointed to your commission, or if there's a bill pending, how quickly or not quickly it will get done. And this incorporates different holidays and scheduling changes. And so the first green column basically says expected council filing date deadline. That's the Wednesday that I talked about prior to the council meeting. Then it gives you the first council meeting, what the dates are based off of when the deadline, and then it follows through to give you when the anticipated committee action will occur, when the deadline for the amendment filings, and then when final action is presented to council. And then the next one that says anticipated bill effective, that just takes into account that the mayor has additional time. Did you want to say something?
I was just going to say, it might be easier for them to see the chart behind them just because they can see it's a little bit bigger font and colors if they wanted to see what it really looked like. I found it easier to read looking at this than the one in front of you.
I know, it's a
just my tip.
But the good news is it's all scheduled out for us. So I was just going to kind of give you an example. Because if you all would have an appointment today, then most likely it would follow a schedule that would have first introduction on October 25th. And I don't need to go through all the dates, but you would be looking at anticipated approval by December 9th. So that just gives you an idea of what you'd be looking at for various legislation that's filed. So next, I'm just going to briefly give to you some information on ordinances and resolutions. I've mentioned them, but I didn't explain them prior. So the council acts either through ordinances or resolutions. They both have the force of law. But ordinances are typically matters more operation of government and business. They pertain to ordinance code changes. You'll see appropriations are always done by ordinance. If the city is enacting any new fees or taxes, approving contracts, anything of that nature is going to be done through an ordinance. Resolutions, on the other hand, the most typical ones you will see are the appointments for your board or for other boards or even offices within the city are sometimes required to go through the resolution process. And then you're also going to see a lot of resolutions that commend someone for their 105th birthday or because their team, you know, a particular team won a championship.
When she retired?
Yes, Carla, when she retired, they did a resolution for her. So there's not a different numbering system for these two. They are basically numbered in the order that they're filed with the legislative services. So there's not some places you go, maybe ordinances may be even numbered and resolutions may be odd numbered. That's not the case here. They all, as they get filed, they get a number. But the difference in their treatment is a little different at the end. So ordinances, once they have been approved by the city council, are then referred to as enacted. And as a result of that, any ordinance that you see in its final form will have the number like 2022-500-E. And that is the way to know for certain that the version of the document you're looking at is the final version. For resolutions, they are adopted. And so as a result of that, resolution 2022-501-A is the final version of the resolution. And so if you were doing research or had asked for some research for different legislation, I would encourage you to look for the final version so that you're operating off of what was adopted. You can look at earlier versions that has filed a document. You can also pull up amendments that have been filed with the legislation. So there's a lot of information you can get if you'd like to do research, but it's important to note that the final versions are going to have an E or an A. Okay. And then this part is kind of the more general part for the commission and the things that you're going to see more often. And Kirby may just jump in certain places. So feel free to, Kirby. All right, so these are the three things we're going to talk about: the commission appointments, then when the commission's asked to review legislation that's proposed by council members or others, and then the commission, the third type is the commission has its own legislation that it is sponsoring. So the first one we're going to talk about are appointments. This is probably what you see most often. The appointments from for your board can be through elected officials. The commission, through the nominating committee, can make recommendations. So if the commission is making the recommendation, as you all have done this afternoon, you talk about the nominating committee's recommendation, and then commission will adopt the recommendation of the committee appointee. So that's what you did in action today already. But if you are ready to take up an appointee, then the legislation is drafted by your staff attorney, Cherry, at OGC. She prepares legislation, then she submits the draft to Kirby, and Kirby reviews and gives any comments to the legislation. And then Cherry prepares the bill as introduced by the council president at the request of the Ethics Commission. And so we have an example of an appointee, Ellen. So Ellen went through the reappointment process prior. She was appointed and then for reappointment. There's some specific council rules on appointment that we just wanted to highlight. It's under Council Rule 4.1101, and basically appointees on your first appointment are required to appear at the Rules Committee to be interviewed by the committee. And those of you who have gone through this process, this will sound familiar, but you're also encouraged to reach out to the individual council members who are on the Rules Committee and actually speak, try to get an appointment with them if they want to speak with you. A lot of times, especially if it's a first appointment, they'll want to speak with you. If you know them from other sources, they may say, oh, I know you, I'm good, I don't need to talk to you. But most of the time, they want to talk and just get a sense of who you are, what your background is, what you're going to bring to the commission. So we always encourage people to reach out before your committee hearing, which Kirby and Cherry, I'm sure, provides that information upon appointment. That information goes to you. For reappointments, if your attendance is greater than 75% at the full commission meetings, not the committee meetings, but at the full commission meetings, then you don't have to appear for reappointment. But if you are less than 75% attendance, you do need to go before the Rules Committee, and they may have some questions for you as to why you missed meetings or you just weren't in attendance. And sometimes it's, you know, family, you know, health or family, things of that matter. It's not like that will prevent you from getting a reappointment, but they certainly do want to talk to you and make sure that you can fulfill the commitment as a commissioner. So we recommend that you talk to them in advance, and if they choose not to meet with you, don't be concerned. Again, they may know you, or they may, especially if you're a reappointment, they generally don't necessarily want to talk to you because you've done a good job, you have that percentage, and they just want to continue with you in that seat. The next item we're going to talk about is when the commission reviews legislation. And so typically what happens is a council member files legislation, or maybe they're working on legislation prior to filing. A lot of times they do it after the fact. They file a bill and then they say, oh, I think the Ethics Commission might want to review this, or this may have impact on the Ethics Commission, so maybe we should send it to them. When's their next meeting? So typically I would reach out to Cherry or Kirby and say, hey, this council member sponsor this bill would like to come to the commission and talk to them, and you'll make, you know, they'll make them available for your next meeting for any presentations that they want to give. Occasionally Kirby may look at the legislation that has been filed and say, oh, I think the commission really should hear this, or I think the commission would like to talk about this. So she can also suggest that the council member bring that item to the commission. But a lot of times they know, the council members know when something affects the commission and they want your engagement and involvement in it. So they will come to your meeting, they will give a presentation or just generally talk about their bill, what they're trying to do, what they think is of interest to you. You work with them, you give them comments, and you can make a recommendation as to whether you like the legislation or whether there's any changes that you think are that you would like to see. So then your proposed recommendations are sent to the council member and to the Office of General Counsel, and we can assist with making those changes to the bill. However, I do want you all to be aware that although the commission may make recommendations, either the particular council member who's brought that to you or another council member would need to offer that as an amendment for the council to actually consider it. So just because you have a conversation at your meeting and you think things are going to change, it may not always be the case. There may be a situation where the council member doesn't want to take your advice, or maybe they take your advice but they make additional changes, or make changes that you didn't discuss. So you do want to follow the process and make sure that your recommendations are being put into potentially an amendment. But if you don't see eye to eye with a council member who's sponsoring it, you can always turn to another council member and ask for them to sponsor the amendment for the Ethics Commission. And then the example here where a council member worked with you on a bill is Council Member Diamond filed a bill. It's 2021-761. And his bill had to do with Chapter 118, which is grants. But in the process of changing that legislation, he decided that he wanted to add an additional disclosure for council members when they or their spouse or their child were seeking grant funding from the city through a competitive process. So he brought that legislation to this commission, and there was discussion. And Kirby, do you want to add more specifically on that part of the process?
Thank you. Not much. I was just going to say you might recall that the commission actually had a pretty robust discussion about it. You actually recommended some amendments to the legislation to extend it, not just limit it to the council member, to extend it to their family members, which the council member agreed to adopt and incorporate into the legislation. That was one of the many things that you all recommended that was added in.
Example that you would typically see are when the commission proposes legislation, and with that process, you have a legislative committee. The committee would work on any proposed legislation and make recommendations to the full commission. The commission would adopt that recommendation, and then the legislation would be drafted. I guess sometimes your committees actually draft the legislation, sometimes it's OGC. You know, we can work off of notes and other matters. So you can bring us ideas in an outline form, and we can work to put that into an ordinance format. But if you all are comfortable writing the legislation, we're not going to get in your way either. So then once that legislation is prepared, it goes back to you all to make sure it says what you want it to say. And you can, you know, ask questions to make sure it says what you think it says. And then you have an example here where Section 401 was changed through Chapter from Ordinance 2018-822. That was, I do have a copy of that so I can reference what that did. This was for, it was amending misuse of position provisions under Section 602-401 and some other activities of employees after they leave the city office under Section 602.402. And I believe this was changed as a result of a city employee leaving the city and then becoming an independent contractor with various groups. And I think there was an interest in having the code those individuals should not, that those situations can be perceived as conflict of interest and that those need to be regulated as well. So that's the example where the commission actually proposed legislation on its own. That is really my last slide, but I'm happy to entertain any questions. I may have drummed you to sleep. But it's a lot of information to take in at once.
Did you want to give the names of the six committees and what they, their topic? Or?
Sure. Okay, so of the six committees, there's one that most likely you wouldn't have much contact with, and that's the Land Use and Zoning Committee. They do zoning and land use amendments, so typically probably the topics are not going to overlap. But the other committees to which your legislation may be assigned are the NCS BHS Committee. That stands for the Neighborhood Community Services and Public Health and Safety Committee. There used to be two separate committees, and they had a lot of overlap, so they combined the two committees. I guess neither wanted to relinquish their name, so they just kind of combined it. That committee meets Mondays at 9:30. That typically would get a lot of references for legislation itself. A lot of the bills go to NCSPHS because that's kind of the public health, community services, like interest to the public. So it does get a fair assignment of bills. Your appointments will only go to the Rules Committee. The Rules Committee meets now Mondays at 2. They did meet on Tuesdays. Now they're trying to screw me up. So it's Mondays at 2. You're going to have your appointments that go through that. The ordinance code changes affecting 602 or any code provisions are probably going to go through Rules. Any waivers are going to go through Rules. And also, for your appointments, I don't think that we have to any appointments that typically the appointments are going to be resolutions, like I said. Sometimes you have to include a waiver of a requirement or a qualification. I don't think it happens often with the Ethics Commission, but there are boards that have requirements like, you know, one of their members be a licensed engineer, licensed with the state of Florida, or someone with a master's degree focusing on accounting and finance, things of that nature. So occasionally you have people who are proposed for their appointment who don't meet those minimum qualifications. If that's the case, you'd have to waive that qualification, and as a result, you have to file their appointment as an ordinance because you're waiving the code requirement. Again, it doesn't happen very often, but I did want to mention that. Then the other committees that you that the council has, one is the Finance Committee. That meets on Tuesdays at 9:30. Obviously, anything with a financial impact will be assigned to the Rules or to the Finance Committee. And then the last committee, besides the Land Use and Zoning Committee, that really isn't of interest to you, is the TEU, which, again, based off the subject matter, that's Transportation, Energy, and Utilities. So not really one that you would typically have any bills going to, but it could happen depending on the subject matter. And those are all based in the council rules. There's a description of the committees based off the types of bills and the types of subject matter where they're assigned to. Is there anything else? Yes, ma'am.
Paige, thank you for coming. This has really been well organized and presented. I was wondering, does your office help people draft bills? It sounded like in some cases you do.
Yes.
And is that part of what goes on even before the filing of bills?
Yes. Oh, yes. Our office probably handles the majority of all bills that are prepared, maybe 98%. Sometimes different boards may have subject matter experts where they work on preparing the legislation like you might do. For instance, development services might make changes to the landscape code that's like highly technical. Our attorneys may assist them with drafting, but a lot of the information is coming from that department or from a board in your case. So yes, we work hand in glove with individuals in the city departments and on the boards and commissions to file that.
Is that the case also with the mayor's office?
The mayor's office has an attorney assigned to the MBRC, and that stands for Mayor's Budget Review Committee. And so basically when a department within the administration has a bill, like something to do with public works, they have a project that they plan to do a few years out, now they've got extra money, they want to do it now. They take that request to the Mayor's Budget Review Committee. That's made up of people within the administration, like the CFO, the Chief of Staff, and also Parks, the Parks Department head, and the Public Works Department head, and a few other people. They all sit on this committee, and they hear from the departments what they want to have prepared. and then it has to be approved through the Mayor's Budget Review Commission, and then an attorney in our office prepares that legislation. But it is all prepared through our office.
That was going to be my next question. The Mayor's office doesn't have lawyers other than the General Counsel's lawyers.
That's correct.
Now that's my understanding about the whole charter.
Yes.
Thank you.
Just a few things I wanted to highlight during Paige's presentation about the legislative process, and there would be no more expert in here other than Paige would be Mary Bland Love. She was the stalwart of a chair for the Legislative Committee in 2018, the last major overhaul that the Ethics Commission tried to undertake. And she certainly can share her own experience, and I won't speak for her, but it was a process that was 6 months in the making.
There was a huge amount of help. I hardly knew what I was doing from day to day. I mean, Cherry and just everyone on staff. Yeah, this is not something that I could certainly claim. I mean, I literally started from the jump. And that's what I think that's what we do on this commission, and that's a reason why we try to bring a diverse amount of experience to it. But you're very kind. I feel oversold.
Not at all. It was a tough process. It was 6 months, February to October. There was a meeting in July that was over 3 hours long, and the legislative committee had undertaken a review of the provisions in Chapter 4, so there were five or six or seven. And that 1 3-hour meeting, they discussed one provision. They discussed the one, the 602-401, all 3 hours. I share that with you to say that the legislative process is not fast and it's not easy. And one of the most important things that we learned during the course of that was you need to engage all your key stakeholders in advance. Before, you do not want to have any surprises being filed when you file a piece of legislation. That's not the time people should be educated and learn about your bill. You should be meeting with groups before, and then once you file the bill, then you, of course, need to be meeting with the pertinent committee members on council to make sure that you address any questions. So, again, there aren't any surprises when the committees are taking up your legislation. But it is a process, and most of you haven't had the good fortune that Mary Bland did live through a major renovation to the code. But I thought it would be important to educate you about that. And lastly, we have pulled up on the screen the legislative search for the city of Jacksonville. You can get through it via the city council's webpage. They have a link to legislation, and you can pull it up and you can search whatever year and words. And so here we were just going to show you we would pull up Ellen. So we entered her last name, and you'll see when they did, and you just click on the piece of legislation, and it's going to it'll tell you the original bill that was filed, whatever exhibits, any amendments. The bill summary is just a summary of the bill by itself that's prepared by legislative staff for city council, and then you see the A that it was adopted, and it gives you the dates that it went through all the committees and everything. So if you ever have any questions about a piece of legislation, you can always research it through that mechanism as well.
Of all the names to be
sitting so far back that I can't see my own name.
Andrea, will you click on number 4, please, which is the bill that was adopted? And not to steal Paige's thunder, but you'll see in the top right-hand corner, it tells you the date that it was adopted. And the very first line is introduced by the council president at the request of the commission.
Woohoo!
And then it has the sequential number, and it goes through, and it has the requirements for her appointment, and then the fact that the council is confirming that pursuant to the code provision and Part 9 of the ethics code. So.
And where's the part where it said I had perfect attendance?
Because you know,
I
that's
did
funny.
Have perfect
that's
attendance.
She has been extremely
faithful. We were talking about that, and Kirby's like, I thought it was in the legislative information. It is not in the legislative information. It's actually on the agenda with that is for the meeting that you're having your appointment. The council auditors go through and they calculate those appointment percentages and put it right below your information where it says, you know, you're basically ready to be approved, and then you may see a reappointment of like 17%, which actually you never really see anything that bad. But but it does have the reappointment percentage, and they do look at that, and basically if you're over that amount, they pretty much think that, you know, for the most part, it would appear you're doing a good job, unless they've heard from someone else that you aren't. But I, you know, it's a very easy process once you know the steps.
So I have another question on that line. There's this distinction in the charter. The kind of appointments that the commission gets are direct appointments from the elected official who nominated each person or appointed each person. Mm-hmm. So when we go to these folks to get their blessing and their approval, it comes through, they vote for it. But suppose, hypothetically, I hope, an appointee is rejected by city council. Is there a way that the appointing authority can go back and insist on that? Or is it just usually a grace and they bow out and they get someone else? Because they're serving as an appointee during this time.
Correct. Typically with council legislation, if the council has acted and their act is to deny the legislation, then there's a provision in the council rules that you cannot reapply or refile that legislation for a whole year.
Okay.
So they would have to wait a year to file the legislation, unless there's a caveat that you can refile something if it's a standard change. But when you're appointing someone to a position, if it's the same person, it's kind of hard to argue that they've substantially changed.
Right, I agree. So the setting, so in that setting, it would behoove the commission, probably through our chair and through our executive director, to go back to the elected official and say, hey, this happened. We would like to go ahead and complete the process of getting all of our appointees appointed. So it's probably better to just get another appointee.
Yeah, I think your option there would be, and especially if it was someone like Judge Cover or someone like that was appointing someone, hopefully he'd have maybe someone second that he could, you know, he could submit a new request for that second person, or else you'd have to wait a year, basically. But that's why it's important that Kirby had said on Alex.
You're not speaking from recent history, are you? Or did that just come up?
Yeah, that's...
You know that's what happened.
That's what exactly happened. Correct, yeah.
I just said...
John Barr.
I think to be
that's
accurate,
John Mark Scott. He
started an appointment process and then withdrew it and then appointed me. And
okay.
So I got a little bit familiar with that. And I was so glad I wasn't number one.
Right. Well, but that's the important in that. But to see also, because it could be that there may be some council opposition or concern because they're hearing something from a third party that may or may not be accurate. So you could always reach out to the council if after a committee meeting, because the committee could take action and the council could take a different action. So you could always... you know, have that period of time in between the committee and the council meeting to approach individual council members, especially those on the rules committee, to say, hey, I heard there was a discussion about this at the meeting, but I'll give you some additional information. You know, you could advocate to try to change that outcome.
Right. I good points. Thank you. Very interesting, actually.
All right, well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Paige.
I did find on the agenda.
Thank you.
Hard work.
And I have a great attendance, which was very important. So just put all of the chat. There you go.
I'm a giant nerd. And Sandy does the yeoman's work of tracking your attendance at every meeting. And if you're excused for the purposes of our minutes, it does not matter to council. If you miss a meeting, you miss a meeting.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if you're excused or unexcused in your percentage for reappointment. And that's only been an issue a couple of times in the history of the commission, and they've been reappointed, but they did have to go for a challenging meeting before the Rules Committee for their reappointment.
That was Darcy.
No, it wasn't Darcy.
It might have been me.
Oh, up there? Oh, yeah, yeah, she was up there. No, it was not you either. It was for people that are no longer on the commission.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I did have that stint, and it was partly, it was just before COVID where my husband was terminally ill.
Yes, yeah.
And I was attending several meetings by Zoom.
But you attended. And it,
well, yes, that's true. I didn't ask for it. You're right. But, you know, I mean, everybody, I like this. I mean, everyone's very practical and they're thinking about things. And I think everyone's been very devoted in the time I've been on to be available for business, because it is serious what we do.
Well, thank you again, Paige. Is the microphone working?
Yeah, kind of. Yours is.
Mine keeps. It's me who keeps rattling it, because when I turn it off, then we don't hear that annoying noise. But if you can hear me well enough, we have one more piece of new business to address, which is the election of officers for 2023. And there may be a potential waiver of Section 5 of the Ethics Commission Internal Operating Procedures, which is the section on election of officers. But for this, I think I'm going to ask Kirby to help me kind of go through what we should be doing next.
Thank you, Ellen. So, in follow-up to our last commission meeting at the end of August, and per the request of the chair, I contacted every commission member who was eligible to be in leadership, and I asked each of those members, do you have the ability and desire to serve in leadership for the coming year? And only Ellen had the ability to serve as chair for the coming year, but she has served two terms. So if you flip to the internal operating procedures in your notebook, it's on page 3 of the internal operating procedures. It's section 5. And it's titled Election of Officers. And that provision in the first paragraph you'll see requires that the commission elect their chair and vice chair each year no later than November or December meeting. So we're doing that today. The term of office is one calendar year. That's not a problem. But a person can serve as chair for only two consecutive terms. This is Ellen's second term this year serving as chair. But when I talk to everybody, everybody is incredibly busy and has really important obligations, and they're unable to serve as chair. She was the only one. And when I did the same polling of members, the only person that was eligible and willing to serve as vice chair was JJ. So that is the status of the potential officers for next year. So if the commission was inclined to consider Ellen's willingness to serve for a third year, it would require a waiver of this particular provision in Section 5 about the limitation of the chair's term being to two consecutive terms. And certainly, I open up to you all if you've had a change of heart and you're raring to be a part of leadership next year and your schedule's changed, please let us know if there's been any changes there. But I think that's a pretty good temperature for where the commission may be.
Well, I would make a motion to waive that two-year limitation in Section 5 for an additional year to allow Ellen to serve.
So I
second.
I guess that's me. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none. If I understand the rule correctly, two-thirds of the commission members present have to agree in order for the rule to be waived. So all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Does anyone oppose? No. Thank you.
Thank you. So now you would, I think, both need a... Cherry
okay.
Would
wave, so now we have a little election.
Yes. I would do a separate motion to elect you just to make it clear.
Is it two separate motions, one to elect you, one to elect JJ, or is it the whole slate of officers?
Cherry?
Let's do Ellen
separately. Yes,
Okay.
Just for our record.
Yes.
All right, I will make the motion to elect Ellen as chair.
And I'll second it.
Okay.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anybody opposed? Thank you.
I will now make a motion to elect JJ as vice chair.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anybody opposed? No. Okay. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
We're much appreciated.
That was slick. What did you say?
y'all are, why she's her fan.
This is y'all have lots of approval here because you've done such a faithful and capable job all along.
Thank you. I'm excited to work with JJ. Next is public comments. We just have Paige, so the public present, so that's nothing. From an announcements point of view, I did want to let everybody know that Wilson Children's Hospital, UF Health, and Moores, along with the Health Department and Florida Bioethics Network, is putting on the 15th Annual Pediatric Bioethics Conference. So I know you all have interest in government ethics, but if you had an interest in pediatric bioethics, we have four great speakers, and I can give you more information, or if it's not like a rule violation, I can send the conference information to Sandy to share. But given that it's medical ethics and bioethics, I find it fascinating. That's my job. But I thought you might have an interest as well. It's virtual on Friday, November 4th. From 8 to noon. Does anybody else want to make an announcement? Anything you want to share? Do you want to talk about the possibility of having a little holiday get together? So that's another thing we talk about for announcements. Before COVID, we would have a little holiday soiree for the Ethics Commission and partners with guests. And I wondered if there was anybody who had an interest in having such an activity this year. I'm 100% always ready for a party. So I didn't know the temperature of the crowd if you feel ready now that we're like 3 years post COVID.
I see some nods up here.
Okay, excellent.
I need to know some.
In my experience, I think there's only been one that I was able to go to, and we did it in a restaurant. I think it was Orsay.
Our last one was Blue Bamboo when he was on Southside Boulevard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe I did go to that.
That was 2019. It was a long time ago.
Right. Yeah, so we're on San Jose Boulevard now. Perhaps what we could do is take like a venue discussion offline, and maybe Kirby and I can come up with a few suggestions and float it to the group with some dates. Mm-hmm. Would that work?
Sounds good. Mm-hmm.
Great. I'm excited
for you.
Oh, any other questions? Hearing none,
you
can adjourn. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Bye, Bruce. Thank you. Oh, my goodness.
Andrea,
I take 2 pills and a nasal spray. I never had allergies before.
Oh, very good.
Don't hold it down.
Not move, but when they were working 2016.